So it comes that time for our lecture, and we have a wonderful lady here tonight who I love. I've got to know her on a personal level. I get to work with her on the board of directors. She's a trustee for FSC, and she always has something fun, country or Wikipedia or
sports,
that's right, sports. Whatever it is, she always has something very interesting to say, and I love this lady. Please welcome Lindy.
Thank you for that wonderful welcome. Teddy Roosevelt once said, and I quote, "It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the right thing and the deeds, and who knows great enthusiasms, great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, does so daring greatly." Now, I've spoken to you before about Brené Brown. She wrote a book titled Daring Greatly, and she speaks in it of vulnerability and success and failure and shame and any number of great topics. And I have with me three copies. What happened to the fourth one? I have three copies of Daring Greatly in 30 minutes for the first three people that apply. But I wanted to contemplate the idea of success and failure and vulnerability for a few minutes. I have about 40 minutes to talk. And it all goes back to when I... well, you know, there's editing going on at the same time here. I heard it said, and I don't know who said it first, and the internet only says it's by unknown. But the quotation is, "The three hardest things to say are, I love you, I'm sorry, and help me." And that really struck me. And then today when I found it on the internet attributed to unknown, it goes on. "But when one is said, it's the most amazing feeling in the world." Isn't that the truth? If we have the courage to speak those words, the feeling that we get is amazing. What is it that these three phrases have in common? Well, they make us vulnerable. They make us expose ourselves to the person to whom we're saying them. Our culture says vulnerability is weakness. So when we love, when we open our hearts to love, we're weakening ourselves and putting ourselves at the mercy of the person to whom we are giving love. How many of you, if any, are watching The Bachelorette besides me? Yeah. Well, Desiree was one of the bachelorettes on the previous Bachelor, and this year she's the bachelorette because she was the most popular of the Bachelor's 24 ladies who didn't get chosen. She put it all on the line and risked everything for love. And just this Monday night, the man that she'd fallen in love with said, "I can't marry you. I don't love you enough." Needless to say, she's heartbroken. And part two is Monday night. Some of us can barely wait. But in our culture, "I love you" is iffy sometimes. But when we truly mean it and when we say it, then it becomes a jewel song. Did you say it? Did you mean it? Did you lay it on the line? Did you say it out loud? Did you make it count? And if you did, hon, that's called satisfied. or words to that effect. Saying you're sorry in our culture means being a softy or admitting you were wrong, depending on the type of sorry that you are. If you're compassionate sorry, you're a softy. If you're wrong sorry, it's bad news. When I worked for Goodrich, I had a temper tantrum in a staff meeting. And people don't know that I have a temper, but when I was at work, I did occasionally. And this time, I had felt betrayed beyond betrayal. And I expressed my feelings about betrayal to my coworker who had done the betraying in front of my other coworkers in a staff meeting. And there were four-letter words and hand parts flying. Then I realized about 6 months later that it really didn't matter. I mean, that in the scheme of things, what he had done was not a big deal. It didn't kill anybody. It didn't injure anybody. It hurt my pride. And I had gone over the top in accusing him of betrayal when it really didn't matter that much. So I inhaled deeply about 85 times. And in another staff meeting, I said, I was wrong. I overreacted. I was inappropriate. And I apologized for my words. And that was one of the scariest things I've ever had to do in a work situation. But, you know, doing it was the right thing. And I felt better having acknowledged my error, having seen the error of my ways, and then communicated it to the person who I had vilified. So it's terrible, but it's really worth it. And sorry doesn't mean that you were unforgivably wrong. Nothing is unforgivable. Help me means displaying weakness. I, for example, can't get up out of a chair by myself. It takes three people. It's especially awkward in the bathroom. Just FYI. One must have strategies. And one of my strategies is to grow old where I sit. Yeah. But our country sees helplessness or needing help as weakness. In fact, our culture sees most everything as weakness. Greed, I guess, is power and strength. But I do try, among my strategies, to seek out handsome young men to pull me up. I have great luck with that. And I have beautiful women pulling me up also, which is equally good. There are four equally great. There are actually four phrases. The fourth one is no. I alluded to this in my talk last week on Sunday, that no is the first word we learn, and it's the first word we forget. But it's also the word that does the most damage to us when we don't say it, as opposed to when we do. Because when you say no to someone, there's always the fear that they won't love you anymore. Well, if me going to lunch with you is going to keep you from loving me anymore, then so be it. I'll find somebody else to go to lunch with. But you know what I mean. It sometimes is important, if not necessary, to say no. When what you're asked to do is not on your path, not meeting your vision, not taking the best and making the best of your energy, sometimes we just have to do it. So I love you. Sorry and help me and no are equally powerful words. How do they feel when you say them to God? Just a question. So one of the aspects of vulnerability is the appearance of failure. I wanted to share with you what the appearance of failure looks like. In a 28-year span, this man lost his job, was defeated for the state legislature, failed in business, had his sweetheart die, had a nervous breakdown, was defeated for Speaker of the House, was defeated for nomination for Congress, lost a nomination for Congress, was rejected for land officer, defeated for U.S. Senate, defeated for Vice President, defeated for U.S. Senate. That's a 28-year span. In the 28th year, he was elected President of the United States. His name was Abraham Lincoln. That's failure. Thomas Edison tried hundreds of times to create electricity and failed. But he didn't give up, and he succeeded. The country song that I chose for this talk is Fall Into Me by Sugarland. When the weight of the world breaks down so strong, it leaves footprints on the street, and there's too many miles to face without a few more hours' sleep. The storm clouds overhead won't shed any rain to quench your thirst, and I want to be the one you run to first. The I in that sentence I think of as God, but the trials and tribulations are some that we all have. We all feel like we're never going to get another drink of water. Spiritual water at some point. At some point, we always feel there's too many more miles to go, that we'll never get enough sleep again. Imagine, if you will, having to say, I love you, I'm sorry, and help me at the same time. When you've lost a job and you're talking to your spouse and your children are at school, and you come home at noon and you have no paycheck, no job, no prospects. And your spouse is there for you. That's what marriage is about, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health. And in Proverbs, it says, even if good people fail 7 times, they'll get back up. And when trouble comes to the wicked, that's the end of them. So there's justification for being good even in failure. Because when you're good, you fall down, you stand back up. When you're bad, you fall down, you lay there in the dirt forever. Psalms 40 says, pulled me from a lonely pit of mud and mire. You let me stand on a rock with my feet firm, and you gave me a new song, a song of praise to you. Many will see this, and they will honor and trust you, the Lord God. So God pulls us from the mire of failure and stands us on a rock with firm stems. And our job is to sing praises to the Lord. Jeremiah 8, 4 and 5. The Lord said, people of Jerusalem, when you stumble and fall, you get back up. This is a theme in the Bible. You can see that. And if you take a wrong road, you turn around and go home or go back. If you take a wrong road, you turn around and go back. How many of us are too proud to admit we took a wrong road and therefore too proud to turn around and go back? I'm never lost. I may take the scenic route. Often do, in fact, take the scenic route. But I'm never lost. And I told you the story just a couple weeks ago about going to Saratoga, where I drove around for 2 hours looking for the freeway that was numbered 280. Nobody had told me that 680 turned into 280. So I kept getting on 680 and getting off because I felt like I was going the wrong direction. And finally I said, God, help me. I'm sorry, I'm so stupid. Help me. And God said, Linda, you have a GPS on your phone. And the famous last words are, And you know, I said, God, why didn't you tell me that 2 hours ago? And you all know what God said. You didn't ask. There's a story about failure. You probably have all heard this one too. The fellow found himself in dire trouble, and his house was going to be in foreclosure, and his business was going broke, and he was desperate, and he decided to ask God for help. Now, we know we don't have to be desperate to ask God for help, but this man was. He says, God, please help me. I've lost my business, and my personal finances are really in bad shape. I'm going to lose my house as well. Please help me win the lotto. Lotto night came, and the man didn't win. Again, he prayed. God, please, please let me win the lotto. I've lost my house and my business, and I'm going to lose my car next. Lotto night came and went, and he didn't win the lotto. He prayed, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? I lost my business, my house, and my car. My children are starving. You've got to help me. Suddenly, a blinding flash of light, and the voice of God rings out. Come on now, you've got to go meet me halfway and buy a ticket. Proverbs, let not steadfast love and faithfulness forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. So you will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. And Philippians 4:13, which Tim Tebow, when he was at the University of Florida, had written in white pen on his black stick-on lamp black and his eyes under his eyes for football games, which says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. He can do all things except play quarterback in the National Football League. However, Ralph Waldo Emerson says, our greatest glory is not in never failing, but in rising up every time we fail. And Pandora Poikilos, whoever she may be, says, if there's one thing I can pass on from my humbling experiences in life thus far, I will tell you this. The next time someone tells you the absence of expectation is the absence of disappointment, do not listen. Have expectations. Keep them great. It'll be a very bumpy ride. You'll even get bruised, sometimes very, very badly. Sometimes you'll come to an abrupt halt or even fall off your ride. But you'll grow. And if you do not grow, you do not live. Brené Brown herself said, hope is a function of struggle. Without struggle, there is no hope, because there's no reason to struggle. And therefore, there's no reason to hope. You think you're defeated before you even try. And that's going to be the main point of my talk here. Joe Frazier, we all know him, said you can map out a fight plan or a life plan, but when the action starts, it may not go the way you planned. And you're down to your reflexes. Heavyweight champion of the world, Joe Frazier says, that means your preparation. That's where your road work shows. If you cheated on that in the dark of the morning, you're going to get found out now under the bright lights. If you think you can take a shortcut to success and avoid failure, you're probably wrong. But let's take a look at the next page, which is teamwork. We're all in this together. No one can succeed on their own, solely on their own. It just doesn't happen. Brené Brown, the famous Brené Brown of Daring Greatly fame, said, one of the greatest barriers to connection is the cultural importance we play on going it alone. Somehow we've come to equate success with not needing anyone. Many of us are willing to extend a helping hand, but we very reluctantly reach out for help when we need it for ourselves. Many of us are willing to extend a helping hand, but we're very reluctant to reach out for it when we need it ourselves. It's as if we've divided the world into those who offer help and those who need help. And the truth is, we're both. Animals, weak animals, less strong animals, let's say, band together to provide defense against their predators. Back in the 1800s, the wagon trains crossing the prairie banded together to provide defense against their predators. You didn't just leave Independence, Missouri, or Poplar Bluff, Nebraska, and head out west by yourself in your own wagon train with your family of four. You wouldn't have made it. You couldn't carry enough. You couldn't have enough supplies. You couldn't have enough support to make it on your own. So they waited in those centers of wagon train formation. And when they had enough wagons to feel sensibly defended, not so many as would take days to cross one stretch of the prairie, but enough so that they would feel defensible, then they would go. This happens in four-wheel drive clubs to this very day. Four-wheel drive clubs, if you're jeeping in southwestern Colorado, you don't go over Big Bear Pass by yourself. The road is not as wide as the car. You want to have somebody there to at least notice if you fell off. My brother said his heart was in his mouth the whole trip, and he wasn't driving. But the jeepers get together and pull tow each other, you know, out of holes or ruts or pockets in the dirt, over rocks that they can't get themselves over for some reason. There was a mudslide on one of the trails in Colorado, and my brother sat in a jeep, in a second batch of jeepers going over this road, and the first batch all deployed their shovels and shoveled the mudslide away, enabling them to pass through and the jeepers behind them, including my brother, to pass through as well. They're taking care of themselves, but they're taking care of each other as well. And we don't hike alone. It's discouraged because you might have to cut off your arm. There's a movie. 129 hours or 187 hours or something before he had to cut off his arm. Peter, chapter 4, verses 8 to 10. Above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Proverbs, an iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. And interestingly enough, my translation of Matthew chapter 18, verse 20 says, for where two or three are gathered in my name, we eat. But that's just the fraternal spiritualist version of that scripture. The true scripture says, for where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am among them. Matthew is among us even now. And Brené Brown suggests that imperfections are not inadequacies. They are reminders that we're all in this together. Nobody's perfect, and nobody's expecting anybody to be perfect, but everybody pretends to have an expectation of perfection from themselves and from other people. How do we ever get through life? It's a miracle. Charles Darwin, in the long history of humankind and animal kind too, those who learn to collaborate and improvise most effectively have prevailed. Those who learn to collaborate and improvise most effectively have prevailed. Helen Keller said, alone we can do so little, together we can do so much. So where does that bring us? To the end of our story, almost. But not quite. When we fail, we develop our struggle muscles. We determine techniques and strategies for succeeding when we try again. And then we try again. And those muscles that say, I can try and I can do this. It might take me 100 times, but I can try and do this. Those muscles are strengthened. When we treat our children like precious jewels from God, well, they are, aren't they? but keeping them from being bruised is not serving their growth to human adult. When we cuddle them and take care of their every owie, they have nothing to fall back on in terms of struggle muscles. So all they learn is, I can't do it. And that turns into helplessness. And helplessness turns into hopelessness. And then they really can't do it. The fear of vulnerability is actually reinforcing itself, because if we weren't afraid of vulnerability, we would allow our children to become vulnerable, not to the degree of great injury, but to the degree of learning how to struggle and how to find ways to succeed. Success is not easy, but it's not impossible either. Anyone can achieve success if we carefully choose our battles. I mean, look at me, I'm talking up here. So we need to let our children prepare to be adults by occasional failure and then occasional consultation with their parents as to how they could succeed if they tried it again. Brené Brown says, I found what makes children happy doesn't always prepare them to be courageous, engaged adults. We're raising children who have little tolerance for disappointment. And if we don't allow ourselves to experience joy and love, we will definitely miss out on filling our reservoir with what we need when hard things happen. The way we combat hard things is to live in joy and love. And when we don't have joy and love, we have no defense against hard things, much as our children have no defense against failure if they have no experience of struggle. So what's that all about? Well, I think the key points to remember are that vulnerability is not a weakness. It's the sincerest form of courage. To say any of those, I love you, I'm sorry, help me, phrases is to make ourselves vulnerable, and it feels good when we do. Try it, you might like it. Failure is a part of life and necessary to actively living fully. Success is a part of life, but it must be tempered by the fire of failure. We can't do it alone. We need each other. And we need to pass this knowledge on to our children. To close, I would like to quote Brené Brown. Owning our story can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it. Embracing our vulnerabilities is risky, but not nearly as dangerous as giving up on love and belonging and joy, the experiences that make us the most vulnerable. Only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness will we discover the infinite power of our light. Only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness will we discover the infinite power of our light. May each of us do so and revel in it. And thank you for giving me this time.
Thank you, Lindy. That was really great. It comes time for announcements. Do we have any first-time visitors? Someone want to help me? Or are you the only one?
I guess so.